Hi, this is Joe Patty. Thanks for listening to WRTI Online. This service is made possible through the support of WRTI's members. You can become a member, too. Since you're already online, just visit www.wrti.org and click the Become a Member link on the upper left corner of the webpage. You can also join us by phone at 1-866-809-9784. Your membership will help keep WRTI's broadcast and online services strong. And again, thank you. Now, on with the show.
Itzhak Perlman is in the pantheon of the greatest artists of the 20th century. And this year marks the 50th anniversary of his American debut. He's our guest today on Crossover. Mr. Perlman.
How are you?
Hi, Jill Pasternak here. Hi. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Sure, no problem.
I really don't know where to begin with you. You have done everything.
not quite.
I guess that's the question I'm going to ask you. You, of course, will be appearing in recital here at the Kimmel Center tomorrow. And you are, of course, teaching at the Juilliard School, and you are concertizing as always, but there is a new blip on the screen for you.
Well, I don't know what you mean by new. I mean, if you're talking about conducting,
yes,
it's relatively new, actually. I've been conducting sort of around 14 to 15 years already. The way it started, actually, was totally not really with the feeling that I wanted to conduct. It was just, call it an accident, if you will. My wife, Toby, started this wonderful summer music program called the Perlman Music Program, which takes place in Shelter Island, and it's for kids between the ages of 12 and 18, pre-college string players, very talented string players. And one of the things that she wanted to do was also, besides their activities of practicing and chamber music and so on, is to set up a little orchestra, a little string orchestra. And so she asked me if I would coach it. And that's how my conducting career started. You know, at first I coached it. I got some nice results. And so everybody said, listen, if you can get this kind of nice result from talented students, why not try it with, professional orchestras? So that's how I did it. So,
well, you never really played in an orchestra, did you?
Well, I did a little bit when I was going to Juilliard as a student.
But that was not your aim at all.
at that time, it was something that I had to do because that was part of the curriculum.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's a whole different experience. I mean, being a conductor.
Listen, if you play an orchestra, there is, and study a symphony, there is absolutely nothing like it, you know, because it's a total different, it's a different attitude that you're doing it from the side of the player. And so the piece always has something different in your head when you do that rather than listening to something. So it's very good.
It's a whole other,
a new experience.
Now, there used to be a very good, I think a White Plains Philharmonic Orchestra some years back.
Uh-huh.
And this Westchester Philharmonic, that's the Westchester, New York,
right,
of course.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Is there any connection or any of the players?
I don't think so. I mean, these the Westchester Philharmonic is made out of very, very good freelance players who basically do this on a regular basis, but they're still freelance. But and they play very well. We had our first concert a couple of weeks ago, and they played beautifully. I mean, really, really beautifully. I was very, very happy.
So this is a whole new thing for you. I mean, it really is a new thing.
It's new and it's not. You know, I've been very, very lucky during my short, shall we say, relatively short conducting career to conduct some absolutely amazing orchestra, among them the Philadelphia Orchestra, which of course
that's quite an experience.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. I mean what a phenomenal, and you know, you talk about the Philadelphia Orchestra sound, but then when you sort of conduct in front of them and you hear that sound coming to you, it's an experience that's quite phenomenal.
It's probably a lot different than playing as a soloist with the Philadelphia Orchestra.
Well, it's a different ball game because you don't really, you know, when you play, you have control of everything that you're doing. hopefully.
Yeah, I was going to say hopefully.
And but when you're in front of a group of talented musicians, you hope to have control of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so I always find that the relationship between a conductor and an orchestra is always has some sort of mystery to it. I always like to mention this, and I think it bears mentioning again, that if you were to put three or four different conductors in front of a group and they would give them a downbeat, you will get basically three or four different kind of sounds.
Yes.
And why is that? I don't know, and I don't want to know. All I know is that it has to do with some sort of electrical relationship, whatever you want to call it. But it's quite interesting, you know, how a group of musicians would interpret what goes on the podium from different people.
Or that the message that is sent out is, of course, a different interpretation.
It could be a different interpretation. It could be something so subtle, and yet that subtlety would translate into the sound that comes out of the orchestra.
Because there has always been that, well, question, is it the orchestra? If you don't have a good orchestra, how good, I mean, a conductor has to be very good, but he's also got to have a great orchestra to play with him.
Well, I'll tell you something. That is a little subtle, what you just said.
It's a bit subtle. I think it was meant to be.
Because I think that, obviously, you know, when you have a great orchestra, they will play very well, mm-hmm. no matter what, no matter who is there. But they will play differently with different people. Definitely, they will. You know, and then so, and for me, I mean, I think that you have to have something from the podium that is a definite interpretation. You know, I mean, just mm-hmm. to stand there and just wave is very easy, especially when you have a great orchestra, because then everything, you know, they'll just play. But then what's the use? You know, if I go, for example, and conduct, you know, an orchestra like Philadelphia, and we play a regular, you know, a repertoire that they've done many, many, many times, then the challenge for the conductor is how do you do a Beethoven symphony
exactly.
Or a Brahms symphony that's different mm-hmm. than what right. they've done in the past, you know, and that's a challenge. That's a challenge, and that also is full of subtleties, and if you can sort of get some sort of a interpretation that you like, I think that's a great challenge.
So it's a bit daunting, I think.
Yeah,
to step
absolutely.
In now, you have chosen a rather interesting program for your recital. Mm-hmm. You chose the Messiaen.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about why?
Well, I just I just look for things that are that I like. You know, I just looked in my library and I said, "Oh, that's a nice piece. Let me try that out." You know, I mean, the Messiaen actually is not a it's quite an accessible work. He wrote it, I think, in 1933 or 20. I don't remember, but around that time,
right?
He wrote it for his wife.
A little earlier than the quartet.
Yes,
for the
yes,
end
yes,
time,
and it's
is,
you know yeah. it has a little bit of. You hear a little Debussy, you hear mm-hmm. a little Ravel, you know, you hear a little French music that was going under that time.
The Impressionist.
It's very nice. It's a nice piece. And then, of course, you've got some of the stuff that's going to come later.
That comes later,
yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So it's quite an accessible piece. I said, why not? You know, I'll just try that. And it's nice because it gives me a fresh sort of outlook on some repertoire and so on, especially since I've been playing a lot of the quote standards and stuff. Although the other work in the program is not that standard, you know, the Strauss Sonata, it's been standard more than before, but still, that's quite it's a very young piece, just like the Messiaen. He wrote it when he was quite young. He was, I think, in his mid 20s. And I just love that piece. You know, I find it extremely romantic in the sort of the essence of romanticism.
Well, you do transmit that when you play. I mean, there is such a soul. Your soul reaches out to the audience. Yeah. I'm sure you've heard that many times before, but it's that's the artistry. Now, I'm going to embarrass you. I think I saw you on the Ed Sullivan Show once.
Well, yeah, well, no, I was never that young. No, I was really, but so that must be
100 years ago.
100 years ago. That was in 1958.
Were you at about 13?
13,
or,
yeah.
You had come, was it, did, had you just come from Israel?
Yeah, from Israel to the United States, yeah.
And you were just astounding, but I remembered that, and I because this is the 50th anniversary of your American debut, isn't it?
Yes, I suppose so, if you want.
Isn't that unbelievable, the way the years go by?
They go by so quickly, and you just turn around, and it's all of a sudden, everybody around you is younger.
Well, either that or it's just, that didn't happen to me. I'm still young inside,
absolutely,
right? That's what happened. Now, that brings up the other question. And it's not that you're bored, but did you ever get that feeling that been there, done that musically? I mean,
well, that's what you know, it's a good thing that you mentioned this, because that's really the great challenge of any artist that has a, shall we say, a long career, and you know, and after a while you do stuff and you repeat stuff. So for me, one of the great challenges is how do you play the Beethoven violin concerto today and still feel that you are making great music? Yeah. And that's basically what, for me, the important thing is this: if you have a great piece, just like the Beethoven concerto, then it's easier. The dangerous thing is not to say to yourself, well, I'm playing, and that's what I'm saying to my students as well. You don't play music, you talk music. Mm. You take the music, you know, we are assuming that everybody, the person that you say that to, can play the violin or any instrument.
Of course.
So once you do that, then the danger is not to Xerox yourself, not to make a copy. You know, I've done this and it's very successful, I'm just going to repeat it the same way. And that is really what helps me with that is basically the music itself and thinking about what I'm doing at the time rather than thinking about just, well, I'm playing it, I played it that way yesterday, I'm going to play it that way today. So, what you are mentioning is a very, is one of the great challenges of an artist. You know, what do you do? But the thing is with me, one of the things that is really helping me is that I've been, in the last 15 years, been teaching more and more frequently. And for me, the teaching really helps the playing.
Well, they say when you teach, you learn.
Yes, and for me, so the three things that I'm right now doing that I did not do years before I would just play concert, but this time I'm doing concerts, conducting, and teaching. For me, all the three things are very, very much complementing each other. And so the teaching helps the conducting helps the teaching, and everything helps the playing.
Well, so you grow as a person as well, and I guess the more that you do and the more that you learn, when you revisit something, it's really different.
Absolutely. You're looking at it from a totally different, you know, from a different kind of experience, and that really helps.
Now, when you did the klezmer, that must have been quite an experience for you.
Well, that for me was a very kind of strange thing, because I got into it and it sort of felt so natural. Because not because I've been playing it all my life. On the contrary, I never did.
You never did.
But the sound in my head and what I wanted to come came very, very naturally to me. And then I was very lucky to play with some very, very wonderful groups. So I learned from them as well.
But it is very improvisational, isn't it?
Yes. But the thing is that you want to improvise and you still want to be in a particular form. You cannot just improvise. And it's not like anything goes. It's got to be within a particular style.
So
once you get the style, then the improvisation is a little easier. In other words, you cannot do. I remember one time that I was doing one of my jazz recordings, one of the takes, you know, the producer and of course, jazz has improvisation,
yes, of course,
necessity as well. Yeah. And so afterwards, my producer said, you know, he said, that sounded a little bit like klezmer.
Well,
so that's when I knew that klezmer came to me quite naturally.
Well, actually, though, there is a jazzy thing in klezmer. I mean, I think that's why it's really, it affects one. But I found that very interesting, just the whole concept of being so free, because there is, improvisation is free, but it is, I mean, you have to know what you're doing.
Exactly.
Harmonically, I think, and
exactly.
Structurally, sure.
Yep. Yes.
So now, this is going to be part of a tour that you're doing, this recital.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel any change physically in your ability to play? I mean, I wonder how that is as musicians, as artists get older. I mean, it's things happen.
Well, I'll tell you, I always say that if you have a good bass when you first study, then it's like, you know, riding a bicycle. you really, you know, you can do it. You know, it's a question of is what form you are in physically. In other words, when you first studied, you know, how did you study, you know, the position of the instrument, you mm-hmm. know, and what you do with your bow arm and so on and so forth. And when that happens and it's done properly, then it lasts for a long time.
It's there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything, any wise words for people that want to make a career out of music? And they need them,
God.
I'm afraid. I think they need them in this day and age. Yeah.
This is such an esoteric question. You know, the important thing is to trust your music and to basically like what you're doing. And I always say to kids, you know, practice slowly.
Yes.
That's one of my great, you know, one sentence help. You know, what do you want to say to a student? So I practice slowly.
Yes, well,
listen,
it's true.
Listen to what you do.
Yeah. But I mean, the world of music has changed. The opportunities and the situation of orchestras and so on. Do you have any feeling about what's going to be happening?
I think I tend to be very optimistic about music. You know, we've lasted that long. We're going to continue.
I don't think it'll ever stop because the world can't live without art.
And you know something, it's interesting, you know, because I'm involved in our program, you know, which gives us access to a lot of talented kids, you know, and I find that the level certainly of string players today is so high, and it's much higher than it was. And not only that, but there's many, many more talented musicians and talented players at a young age. So I'm not, you know, so maybe I'm looking at it from an unrealistic thing for where I'm looking at. There are a lot of wonderful talent.
There's talent, but is there opportunity?
Opportunity, I think, if you have a great talent, there is opportunity. Maybe it's more difficult because there's so many more people who are terrific. But, you know, I can't really tell. I would hope that there is. I would hope that there is. But there are so many things that you can do. I mean, for example, what I say to the kids, you know, and to my students, is that the most important thing when they play is to be able to teach as well. Mm-hmm. Is to really, really, because teaching, as I said before, teaching helps you. And well, there are many opportunities to do things in music. And for me, if I had to give advice to a young person who tries to make a career in music, I would say to them that they should not look at something just, I'm going to do A, and that's it. And if I cannot do it, I'm not going to do anything else. They should look at all their opportunities. You know, if I want to be a soloist, fine. If I can't do this, I want to play chamber music. I want to play an orchestra. Mm-hmm. I want to teach. I want to do things in music. I want to do some of each. Because sometimes you find that, you know, you have kids who have just this goal in mind, a particular goal. And then if they cannot do it, they get very, very upset and disappointed. Mm-hmm. And they don't do anything else. But you have to do things in music. If that's what you like, you've got to be able to find other things than possibility A. You know, you've got to go to B, you've got to go to C. Not that B and C are less than A. It's just different. And so for me, they've got to have always an open mind as to what they want to do in life in music.
Well, that's a very good recipe for anybody,
I think so.
Wonderful. And they're encouraging words. And Yitzhak Perlman, what a wonderful opportunity to speak with you. And I hope that I will meet you. And I hope that you will continue to concertize and come back to Philadelphia occasionally.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. Okay. Bye-bye.